So this this little boy was deathly afraid of the dark. Hated it. Couldn't stand it. And one night after dinner, about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, his mom is cleaning up, and she realizes that the broom is out on the porch. So she says to Jimmy, she says, "Jimmy, would you go out to the porch and would you get the broom because I need it to finish cleaning up?" And Jimmy said, "No. No, Ma, it's dark. I don't want to go out there, Ma. And Mom says, "Jimmy, there's nothing in the dark that's going to hurt you. It will be okay. Don't worry about it." And Mom, "Please don't. But Jimmy, Jesus is out there. And Jesus will protect you from anything that could harm you. Jesus is everywhere, so you don't have to be afraid." And Jimmy thinks about this and says, "Mom, are you sure Jesus is out there? You promise me?" "Oh, I promise you." So little Jimmy goes to the back door and he opens the door just ever so slightly and he kind of peeks around the corner and he yells out, "Hey, Jesus! If you're out there, can you bring me the broom?" Now, fear, for those of you who have them, is a very powerful emotion, right? And we don't like it. We don't like fear or stress or anxiety. And the reason why we don't like it is because that's not how God created us. When all of this began, God did not wire us to be afraid. And I've shared that with you before. If you look in Genesis 1 and 2, there is no mention of the word fear. There's no implication of the word fear, stress, or anxiety. But then chapter 3 happens. And fear and all that goes along with it enters into our human existence and becomes, for some of us, the way we survive. Well, God saw that. And so God, in ways I can't understand, and I surely can't explain, we rewired our brains from what they were originally wired. And so he put in our brain this part of our brain that only function is to constantly be on the lookout for any threat, for any danger, for anything that might hurt you, for anything who might bring stress to you. That's the only thing this part of the brain does. And when it detects a threat or a danger, it starts a chain reaction in your brain and in your body that all sorts of things happen. Some people sweat, some people get nauseous, some people actually throw up. Some people start shaking. I don't know how you handle it when your brain kicks in. But it also presents you with two choices. And it says to you, when you're in the midst of a threat, you can either fight or you can flight. You can either stand your ground and say, "Whatever it is that is threatening me right now, I am going to beat." And you fight it. And you try to remove that threat from your life. Or you choose to flight. And you realize when the brain gives you the choice that you can't remove that threat, so you're going to remove yourself. Right? And we've all made those decisions. Now, here's the problem, at least for me. There are many situations in my life where I can't fight it, and I can't flight. And when those happen to me, I just get in this situation where I lose a lot of hope because I feel like I'm no longer any sense of control or have any power. And the more serious the threat, the more hopeless I feel. the more serious the danger, the more powerless I feel. The more serious the fear, the more stuck I feel. So I just got to believe there's a third option. And if you've been in one of those situations where you can't fight and you can't flight, then you understand that feeling that comes over you. You understand the dread and the hopelessness and the powerlessness that just invades your spirit. And I know some of you have been there. And if you've been there with me, you understand how the disciples felt in this one story that Matthew tells. So what I want you to do, we're going to look at this story, and I want you to, if you will, open your Bibles to Matthew 14. And we're going to start at the 22nd verse, and we're going to just kind of work our way a little bit through it, and we'll see where it takes us. Matthew 14, verse 22. Right then, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead to the other side of the lake while he dismissed the crowds. And when Jesus sent them away, he went up onto a mountain by himself to pray. Evening came, and he was alone. Now, what Matthew does here is he places this story in a series of events of stories, starting with the death of John the Baptist, followed by the feeding of the 5,000, then this. And this story begins with Jesus sending the disciples away. Now, the reason why he sent them away wasn't to punish them, wasn't because he was mad at them, but if you read the Gospels, when there's just certain times where Jesus just needs to be alone. He doesn't need anybody bugging him. He needs to be alone with God. In fact, if you look back at the feeding of the 5,000, that miracle story begins with Jesus being alone. So when you're in the Gospels, if you see that the gospel writer had Jesus being alone and emphasizes it, especially emphasizes it twice in one story, one verse, you know something fit is to happen. Something big is going on. So let's find out what happens. Meanwhile, the boat, fighting a strong headwind, was being battered by the waves and was already far away from the land. Now, in the original language, the far away from the land, there's a Greek word, stadia, and stadia translates, it's a Greek measure of about 200 yards. And so some scholars say that the boat had only traveled just a little over 200, maybe 300 yards, and these were experienced sailors, but because of the strong winds and the waves, they couldn't get out very far. Others say they were out 500 or 600 yards. Just know that they weren't anywhere near shore. Jumping ship was not an option. That's what Matthew wants you to know. And the storms, those of you who've been to Sea of Galilee, you understand this better than I do. Sea of Galilee, very common for storms to just kind of come up out of nowhere, and when they do, they're very fierce, and has something to do with the fact that the Sea of Galilee is 700 feet under sea level, and surrounded by some mountains that are 1,200 feet tall, and it creates all these weather things going on that the Weather Channel and Jim Cattori can explain to you, but I can't. Just say it was a bad storm. It was a very bad storm. That's where we are. Very early in the morning, now the language Matthew used and some of the translations use it, is during the fourth watch. Now, in the Roman system of the evening, there were four watches. The evening began at 6 o'clock. First watch was 6 to 9, second watch 9 to midnight, third watch midnight to 3, fourth watch 3 to 6. So what Matthew's saying is somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. this event happens. What's interesting about that is most people think that this is a little foreshadowing. Because anybody else knows what happens during the fourth watch in the Gospels? Someone say resurrection. Resurrection, good answer. The resurrection took place during that fourth watch. And so what I think is, this is like a little foreshadowing, right? Because remember, this is written 60 years after Jesus was around. And so they knew the end of the story. So this is a little foreshadowing Matthew gives. He says, look, it's the fourth watch, which means God's going to show up. So those of you hearing the story for the first time, don't worry about the disciples, because God's going to show up. It's got a happy ending. And sure enough, Jesus came to disciples walking on the lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified and said, it's a ghost. They were frightened and they screamed. Now, they didn't think he was a ghost because he was glowing in the dark, or because he slimed them, or because, you know, because he was eerie looking. They thought he was a ghost because they didn't have Weather Channel. And so they didn't know why weather and storms came up so often on the Sea of Galilee. What they believed, whenever a storm came, it was the evil spirits doing their thing, causing the storm. So when they saw this figure walking to them, they immediately thought it has to be an evil spirit. And so the translation is, it's a ghost. And if you see a ghost, what do? You scream. You can't run. You're in the middle of a sea. And so you scream. And just a little extra. You didn't pay for that. And just then, Jesus spoke to them. Now, this is where my translation is so poorly written. Because what it says is, be encouraged. It's me. Don't be afraid. That is so not right. What Jesus said was, I am. Be encouraged. Don't be afraid. And the reason why that is, it's me, is such a bad translation of I am, because Matthew wanted you to understand the I am. And those of you who've done Bible study will recognize two things immediately. Thing number one is the I am is how Jesus referred to himself in the Gospel of John. I am the living water. I am the resurrection. I am the bread of life. You with me? But then more importantly, your mind should go the other way, all the way back to Exodus, when Moses encounters a burning bush. And the bush says, I want you to go to Pharaoh and let my people go. And Moses says, no way. And they have this argument. Moses finally gives in and says, okay, if I do it, who do I say sent me? And the bush says, I am. It doesn't say it's me. I am. And I am was the name for God in the Jewish world. We call it Yahweh. And Yahweh was spelt Y-H-W-H, no vowels, because Y wasn't a vowel back then. No vowels, because you could not spell God's name. It was that sacred, and if you spelt it out, you would die. And what Yahweh translates to be. Doing something. And so the Jewish people understood this God, this Yahweh, to be a God of action and activity, not just a God of existence. And what the Jewish people believed, and this is important to this story, is that when God shows up, something is going to happen. He's not just going to show up and say, here, something's going to go down. And that's what happens. Jesus shows up, tells them, I am, and they were ready. Now, let's just be real. I know what's going on in some of your lives, right? I'm your pastor. Some of you, I know that you've gone through some pretty rough storms, that your little boat is getting beaten around. And I know some of you just went through storms. And you're still kind of a little wobbly from them. And for those of you who are like all sunshiny, not to be Johnny Raincloud or Debbie Downer, but you've lived long enough to know that the storms are coming. Because that's how life is. You're either in a storm, just finish a storm, or about to enter a storm. And the storms are different. I mean, some of the storms are real minor. Some of the storms are just inconveniences, like you oversleep, right? And you're already running late for work, and you go outside, you realize your car has a flat tire. That's a minor inconvenience. Or if you're in school, you get a bad grade on a test. Or you say something that's misunderstood, and it puts this horrible strain on a relationship that you value. And we've all had days like that, right? A bad day, and it just gets worse. And then before we know it, it's actually worser, right? Those are small storms. Some of you going through those, and you're okay. You can fight or you can fly, and you're going to make that. But there's others who are going through Category 5 hurricanes. I mean, I'm talking the storms that threaten to drown you and beat you and kill you. Loss of a job. Loss of a marriage. Not knowing how you're going to pay your bills. A medical diagnosis that you don't understand and the doctors can't explain. And there doesn't seem to be a treatment. Or you've stood at the grave of a loved one. And you just feel beaten. And on those major storms, you can't fight it. And there ain't nowhere to run. That's why I'm thankful for the rest of the story, because Matthew gives us a third option. And I want you to listen. And I want you to hear this as if you're hearing it for the first time. Listen. 14, verse 28. And Peter replied, "Lord, if it's you, order me to come to you on the water." Now, that's a bad translation. See, because in that translation, Peter is challenging Jesus to prove himself, and Peter wouldn't do that. A better, more faithful translation would be, "Lord, since it's you, order me to come." Because Peter knew it was Jesus. Because he already, "I am." Peter knew that. Peter said, "Since it's you, God, I want to be out there with you." And the rest of the story. And Jesus said, "Come." Then Peter got out of the boat and was walking on the water toward Jesus. But when Peter saw the strong wind, he became frightened. As he began to sink, he shouted, "Lord, rescue me." Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him, saying, "You man of weak faith, why did you begin to have doubts?" When they got into the boat, the wind settled down. Then those in the boat worshiped Jesus and said, "You must be the Son of God." Now, most preachers right here are going to preach about Peter, right? That's what you've heard. They either bash Peter for having no faith. You know, like what I always want to say when I hear that sermon, let me see you get out of the boat in the middle of a storm, right? And so they slam Peter, or they praise Peter. Well, you know, he was willing to take a risk, even if it meant drowning or whatever. And there's even a book that I love called "If You Want to Walk on Water, You Got to Get Out of the Boat," and it's all about taking risks. Problem with those, neither one of those are a good translation. It's not what Matthew wanted. You know how I know? You know how I know? Because when Peter got back in the boat with Jesus, not one of the disciples said, "Hey, way to go, Peter," right? Not one disciple said, "Attaboy, Peter," and not one disciple said, "You loser. You couldn't even walk on water. What's the matter with you?" What did they do? When they got back in the boat, it wasn't about Peter at all. It was all about Jesus. And what Matthew says is they fell down and worshiped Jesus because he is the Son of God. And for the first time in all the Gospels, the disciples, they're not praising Jesus, they're actually worshiping Jesus. And they, for the first time, they recognize who he is and what he really is about. And so this is not a story about Peter, his lack of faith or his overabundance of faith or his willingness to take it. This is a story about what Jesus does. It's a story about a God who always shows up. That's what Matthew wants you to know. What Matthew wants you to know is when you're going through a storm, it's not about fighting or flighting. It's about a God who shows up, because that's the God we have. Yahweh, a God of action, one who's going to show up in the midst of your storms. Now, Matthew never says the storm's going to go away. He just says God's going to show up. And that's what God does. That's what Jesus is all about. Right? Jesus showed up that day on the Sea of Galilee when the disciples were about to drown. Jesus showed up to a woman at a well whose society had thrown her aside. Jesus showed up to a blind man named Bartimaeus. Jesus showed up to a bunch of lepers when they called out to him. Jesus showed up to Zacchaeus, who was stuck in a tree. Jesus showed up to a widow who was on her way to a funeral to bury her only son. And Jesus showed up to his best friend, Lazarus, who was in a grave for 4 days. See, what the gospel tells us is in the midst of storms, we have a God who is always going to show up. And when he shows up, he says, come. I know it's in the storm, but come. And that's what Peter did. Because Peter knew that in the middle of a storm, the best place to be, the safest place to be, would be to wherever Jesus was, even if it was out in the middle of the ocean. And so Peter took a step. Not because he was crazy, not because he was high risk, not because he was arrogant or overconfident, not because he took a step, because he said to himself, Jesus, since that's you, I'd rather be with you. In the midst of this storm, I'd rather be with you. And Jesus says, come. Because he says, I am. I am the God who spoke all of this into creation. I am the God who formed order out of chaos. I am the God who delivered my people out of the Pharaoh's army. I am the God who paved a four-way highway in the middle of the Red Sea when my people couldn't fight and couldn't fly. I am the God who's with you in the hospital room to hold your hand. I am the God who will wipe away every tear from your eye. I am the God who promises, I will be with you, even to the end of time. So if you're in the midst of a storm, and you can't fight, you can't run, we have a third option. To walk out to where Jesus is. Storm's not going to disappear, but there's nowhere safer to be. And when you walk out to him, he puts out his hand. And he says, dance with me. Even on these angry waves, dance with me, even though it's dark. And so this morning, I encourage you. I beg you. If you're going through a storm, just dance. Dance with faith. Because we have a God who promises to never let us go. Dance with courage and sing out, because he lives, I can face tomorrow. And dance with joy, Because the psalmist tells us that God is good and his love endures forever. But just dance. See, when you're in a storm, I want you to be like that little boy. Open the door. Call out to Jesus. But then take a step towards him. Put your hand in the hand of the man who calms the waters. And then dance. Because that's the gospel. Like, you should have a thing. I don't know what we're calling these. People have asked me. I don't know. It's a thing. What I want you to do, I want you to take it in your right hand. Not your left hand, your right hand. Or your left. Whatever. I'd give my left arm to be ambidextrous. There's a joke in there somewhere. If you need one, ushers are on the back. Right? And I want you to hold tight to it. And whatever storm you're facing, whatever stresses in your life, whatever anxiety that just threatens just to take you over, I want you to just think of that and put it on this thing that's in your hand. And then when you're ready, just come forward, and there's water and containers, and just drop it as a way of letting it go to God. Look, the storm's still going to be here. But when you give it to God, you can dance. And that's what this life is about.